Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. One of the reasons I so love doing this program is that questions come into my brain every now and then. And I'll go, what's up about that? Or who are these people? What is this philosophy or this theology? And I'm able to contact people, tell them I have a radio show, and they're more than happy to come on and tell me about this philosophy, this person, these people, etc., etc. This is exactly what has happened here. One of the populations that I've been curious about for a while now are the Copts, those people who practice Coptic Christianity in places such as Egypt and Sudan. We hear about them more in the news today because they are under so much oppression from the ruling classes. I read a wonderful piece about the Copts not too long ago, written by Monique Elfaizi. She is a Paris-based journalist, and she's agreed to come on today to talk. She's written for a wide variety of publications, including The New York Times, The Guardian, The Washington Post, The Financial Times, France 24, Marie Claire, GQ, Glamour, Moscow Magazine. She's lived and worked in Egypt, Russia, Europe, Asia, and the United States. She covers beats ranging from Wall Street to the Arab American community. She's held staff positions at the New York Daily News, the Philadelphia Inquirer, and the Associated Press. Elfaizi's work often focuses on people or groups that are disenfranchised and or misunderstood, and she tries to bring nuance to subjects that are usually depicted in broad strokes. She's also the author of God and Country, How Evangelicals Have Become America's New Mainstream. Elfaizi is a fellow at the World Policy Institute, a former board member of Doctors of the World USA. She has her bachelor's from the University of Pennsylvania and an MSJ from Northwestern University. We welcome to Common Threads, Monique Elfaizi. Hello, Monique.
Hi, Fred. How are you?
Just fine. Thanks so much for joining us. And you're joining us from Paris today. That's we're always happy to speak across the pond. So my first question to you is, because I can only assume that many people are in my boat, that they're not familiar with Coptic Christianity. It's something a term that comes up once in a blue moon until, of course, the creation of the Islamic State and the radicalism that's going on, particularly in Egypt. And now people, conversations arise where we talk about Coptic Christianity. So can you give us a thumbnail sketch, a brief history? What is Coptic Christianity and how is it different from other forms?
The Coptic Church is actually, if not the first church, one of the first churches established after the death of Christ. It was founded in Alexandria in about 42 AD by the Apostle Mark, who traveled down to Egypt. So it's one of the oldest churches in the world. It's an Orthodox church. So it has, you know, all the ceremony and ritual that you see in places like the Greek Orthodox Church, the Russian Orthodox Church. It is an Eastern Orthodox Church, which makes it separate from Greek Orthodoxy, to which it's probably the closest. But it's a very ancient church, and Copts are the largest group of Christians in the Middle East, or they have been traditionally. I mean, they are, I think they still are, but they are certainly under attack, as are Christians throughout the Middle East right now.
What theologically makes them different from, well, say, you said that they were different from Greek Orthodox, and I know that they have their own pope. I'm assuming that is probably one of the major things that separates them?
Yeah, I mean, these differences date back centuries to various, you know, synods and meetings. The real difference between Copts and, say, Greek Orthodox is very, very picayune. It has to do with the state of Jesus when he was on earth. Was he fully divine and human at the same time, or was he both divine and human in equal states at the same time? It's very, you know, it's the kind of thing that theologians argue over for hours, but in actual practice, there's very, very little difference than I've seen. Obviously, you know, hymns and specific rituals are different, but overall, you know, the untrained observer could go into a Greek Orthodox church, a Russian Orthodox church, a Coptic Orthodox church, and feel pretty much at home in all of them. They're quite similar.
Sure, but they do have their own pope. Tell us about that.
They do. So they have now Pope Tewodros, who replaced Pope Shenouda a few years ago. He is pope only to the Egyptian Coptic Church. He was many years ago, not this pope, but the Egyptian Coptic pope also was pope to the Ethiopian Coptic Church, and that split off, I don't know, 50, 60, 70 years ago. I don't remember exactly when. But I have met Ethiopian Copts who say the practices are remarkably similar. But so he is Pope Tewodros. The pope before him was the pope for much of the lives of adult Egyptians today. He started under Sadat and went through all of Mubarak's reign and died right around the time of the revolution, or maybe just before the revolution. I can't remember exactly. But he was extremely beloved by Copts, and his death was a blow at a time of political unrest and instability when the church was already feeling insecure in their place in this new Egypt.
How long does this sense of insecurity go back? How far back?
Well, you know, it ebbs and flows, but the Copts have been constantly discriminated against. Well, you know, to varying degrees, but they have been discriminated against since Arabs came and conquered Egypt. When they first came, they, you know, back in the 600s, Copts were taxed extra. There was real pressure on them to convert if they wanted to avoid these taxes, so a lot of people converted then. And then, you know, there have been various waves of violence against them, discrimination. They had what people refer to as their golden era, when Egypt was under British control, and they had sort of a very liberal parliament, and Copts at that point during the reign of the king were welcomed into the king's court and had very senior positions. And but once he was gone after the 1952 coup, that really changed. So you know, Copts will often tell you that they live in harmony with their Muslim neighbors. They probably say that less since the rule of Mohammed Morsi. But you know, my father comes from a Coptic family. He's not a practicing Copt. And my relatives, when I would ask about it as a kid, would say, "No, we're fine. We're fine." You know, discrimination can be subtle or it can be overt, and at times it was very subtle, at times it was more overt. It also has a lot to do, although that's changing too, with where one lives. I think that sectarian conflict is much, much more common in the countryside, although just today, a few hours ago, a Coptic priest in a suburb of Cairo, or sort of in a development on the outskirts of Cairo, was bludgeoned in the head with a meat cleaver in the middle of the day, you know, on a street. So it's certainly coming to the cities as well. And I've seen, just anecdotally, a spike in people's willingness to be overtly discriminatory about Copts.
In terms of things like employment, social settings, things like that?
Yeah, well, so I lived in Egypt between 2013 and 2015, and I had an Arabic tutor, and he told me a story. He was a pretty liberal guy, worked with Westerners, and I wouldn't call him liberal, but an open-minded guy. He was, you know, still conservative religiously. But he had been in a restaurant with some friends of his, and a waiter was Coptic, and they said, "We don't want him to bring us our food. We don't want him to touch our food," which really shocked me that in Cairo, in an educated milieu, people, A, would think it, but B, feel free to say something like that. I was pretty surprised by that.
And I'm curious, what would be the markings if I walked into a restaurant? How would I know whether my waiter was a Muslim or a Copt?
You probably wouldn't, and I probably wouldn't. I mean, there are some very obvious things that Muslims in Egypt often have what they call the raisin, the black mark on their forehead from praying so much. So if you see that, you know somebody's a Muslim. Copts often tattoo a small cross on the inside of their wrist. So sometimes there are very obvious markings, but aside from those, you know, there are obviously Christian names that some people have, but aside from that, I don't know that I could tell the difference. Perhaps Egyptians can, but probably not all the time.
And so when you were growing up, you did not grow up in Egypt, correct?
No. Okay. I grew up in the U.S.
Okay. And your father was from Egypt?
He is, yeah.
Okay. And where does he live now? I'm curious.
In California.
Okay. So he grew up as a Copt, and he essentially, and the rest of your family pretty much said, well, things are okay. That's what I'm gathering from you, that there may be...
Yeah, his family was fairly privileged. They worked for the king. They enjoyed a pretty elevated place in Egyptian society, and I think were very, very comfortable.
When we think of the Middle East right now, of course, there's so many tensions, so much violence is taking place. When you look at Egypt today, are you any more optimistic? Specifically, let's talk about Egypt right now. Are you any more optimistic with the current leadership than you would have been a couple of years ago, or are things still strained?
Well, when you say a couple of years ago, you mean Morsi. That was such a short tenure. It certainly, Copts felt very insecure under Morsi. Perhaps with good reason, perhaps not, but they certainly felt very insecure. The country was becoming much more overtly religious. And when I say religious, I mean much more overtly Muslim in a way that frightened Copts. But I would not say they are secure today. I think that the Sisi government makes all the right noises about wanting to protect Copts, but they don't do a lot to back that up. And, you know, we've seen... you know, church bombings and cops on buses getting slaughtered, and there's just been an incredible wave of violence against cops during Sisi's tenure. So no, I don't. And you know, like I said, today a Coptic priest was killed on the street. There've been recent stabbing. You know, there's what seems to be an alarming trend of random violence against cops, just, you know, out and about doing their business. The numbers are still small, but you know, they're consistent enough that they have to make you stop and think. So no, I would not at all say Copts should be feeling any sense of security in Egypt today. I think it's worse than it has been in a very long time.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU Radio. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Monique El-Faizi. She's a Paris-based journalist, and we're speaking, among other things, about the Coptic movement, particularly in Egypt, but other places as well, as we will get into in short order. Aside from the Copts, if you're in Egypt today and you are not Muslim and you're not Copt, what else might you be other than, say, 100% secular? What are the other religious movements and how are they faring?
Well, actually, you can't really be 100% secular. Your Egyptian ID that everybody has gives you a religion, and you have three choices, Coptic or Christian, Muslim or Bahia, which is a very, very small minority there. But so you can't be secular. Atheism is illegal in Egypt, and it's a very hot-button issue. But what you could be, and actually we talked about my father being Coptic. Technically, he may be, but he isn't really. So when we had the French and the British in Egypt, they set up missionary schools. And the French schools tended to be Jesuit or Catholic, and the English schools tended to be Protestant. So you have a lot of people who converted to either Protestantism or Catholicism, including my grandmother, and she raised my father as a Protestant. Interestingly, some of her sisters remained Coptic, but she was sent to a Protestant school and became a Protestant. So you do see other sects of Christianity. There's a growing evangelical movement, but they're kind of, you know, they call them Coptic evangelicals or Coptic Catholics. They're kind of lumped under the Coptic umbrella, but they, you know, they practice as Protestants or Catholics or evangelicals. So it's a little bit more nuanced than, you know, official statistics might suggest.
And
for instance, the Islamic radicals who would foist violence on a Copt, they would just as easily foist violence upon a Catholic or a Protestant. Am I correct? It's not that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just any Christian is a target.
Right. And
it's just that most Christians are Copts. You know, the other groups are quite small compared to the Copts.
Do you have any insights into the evangelical movement in Egypt? Because I know that there have been, I've always heard about missionary work in Egypt and how it can be dangerous, and particularly evangelical work. Do you have any knowledge of that world?
Yeah, well, so there are Egyptian evangelical churches. I went to one. It has, you know, all the hallmarks of an evangelical church in the U.S., although perhaps somewhat toned down, but, you know, charismatic leader, those kinds of things. In terms of missionary work, my kids went to school with the kids of several missionaries. Technically, there are no missionaries in Egypt. It's not, you can't legally be there as a missionary. So they're not allowed to try and convert people under Egyptian law. So they go and they minister to these churches, but there is technically no outreach or no trying to, you know, no proselytizing or anything like that. But, of course, there are, you know, a fair number of other denominations. There are foreigners there running churches. There's a sizable LDS church there, a Mormon church there also. I don't know, I never went, so I can't tell you what percentage is foreigner and what percentage is Egyptian, but there's certainly Egyptians that go to it. So you do have these small outposts of other Christian sects, but for the most part, they really are small.
And is it against the law to change your religion in Egypt?
No. It depends which way you want to go. If you're Christian and you want to become Muslim, that's very easy and it's no problem. If you're Muslim and you want to become Christian, it's not technically against the law, but you're going to find it very, very, very difficult to do officially.
In what way?
Now, I'm sorry. I went to one of these evangelical churches, and the pastor of the church told me that he had Muslims who were sneaking in and who had become born-again Christians and who were practicing, and they couldn't tell anybody because they would have been completely alienated from their communities and their families.
And how about this official identification that you have with the state? So let's say I didn't care about my family and what they thought of me. I didn't care about my friends. I want to become Christian, and I want to make it official. Do you have to jump through hoops to get that legal identification modified from Muslim to Christian?
You do. You do. Anything involving officialdom and Christianity is very difficult. And I can speak anecdotally. Because I have an Egyptian father, I'm entitled to Egyptian citizenship, and I tried to get an Egyptian ID card, to which I'm 100% entitled. And it took me years, and they kept turning me down, and they kept turning me down. And of course, nobody ever said that it was because I was Christian, but when they would see that I was, they would ask for all kinds of additional documentation. And so nobody ever says no. They just make it very, very difficult.
Are you still attempting that?
No, I finally got it. What I finally did is I did it in an embassy in New York, or the consulate in New York, instead of trying to do it in Egypt, where, of course, you know, the prejudices aren't quite as strong.
Sure, sure. Why is it, when we think of, say, for instance, Greek or Romanian, name any of Russian, any of the Orthodox churches, we know that they are fairly far flung. I haven't done any investigation on this. Maybe Coptic churches are farther flung than I thought, but I never run into them. I never hear about Coptic churches here in Michigan or anywhere else. I can only assume that there must be some here in the United States and elsewhere.
There are a lot, and they're pretty strong. So New Jersey has a couple of very big Coptic churches. New York has some. Washington, D.C. and Virginia have some robust Coptic churches. California does. I couldn't tell you about Michigan, but I would not be surprised if you had one somewhere there.
You know, I would guess so. No, maybe in Dearborn. I don't know if you...
I don't know the Arab community there, but because you have such a big Arab American community there, I would be surprised if you didn't have a Coptic church somewhere there. And Australia has, and Canada both have sizable Coptic communities with very strong churches. When Copts go into the diaspora, they tend to really, I mean, not all of them, but of course they do have, like any diaspora group, many of them cling to their old traditions and really center their lives around their diaspora communities. So some of those churches are very cohesive and strong. There was one that I go to in New Jersey from time to time for when I'm doing research or something. And, you know, it is, they all know each other. They all grew up together. It's a very strong community. Interestingly, this is something I found very interesting. The pastor or the priest of one of those churches, I wrote about him in a New York Times article a few years ago, a guy named Abuna Michael, which means Father Michael. He started near Princeton, New Jersey, a seeker-friendly church, so a church that would be accessible to people who are not Coptic and who are not familiar with Coptic rituals, to let them come in, because it is a very ritualized mass. And so when you go, if you don't know what to do, and I often don't know what to do, it's very intimidating and confusing. There's a real, you know, you take your shoes off at a certain point, you stand, you sit, you go up, you kneel, it's choreographed, and if you don't know the choreography, it can be overwhelming and you know, a little bit off-putting. So they started this church that doesn't do so much of that, to welcome people who might be curious about Coptic Christianity, which is something very, very new for Copts, to sort of open up to outsiders, because in Egypt that's not the culture at all.
And we're talking about people that, if they were interested in the Coptic Church theologically, if they weren't Egyptian or at least Middle Eastern, they would also have to navigate the culture, correct, aside from the actual theology and ritual.
Absolutely.
And this is interesting. Now, we had quite a while back, we had a priest on from a Ukrainian Catholic church. So as you know, from the Eastern Rite Catholics, they look and sound and smell all Orthodox, but they're really, they are in communion with Rome. And I went to a liturgy one morning, and I noticed that I was probably the only person under 70. And it was all in Ukrainian. And when we had this interview, he was talking about how this next generation, the second generation, because all of the people at this liturgy, all the people who are really the nucleus of his church, are first generation, but the second generation, they find it so easy to just go to a Latin Rite Catholic church, or maybe even become Protestant. I'm curious if you have seen how much of the Coptic tradition is filtering down to the next couple of generations.
Well, I think that that's exactly what they were concerned about when they started this seeker-friendly church, and I'm a good example. I mean, I come from a big Coptic family, even though my father didn't practice as a Copt, you know, all the weddings and Christmas and the high holidays, or the, you know, Easter, those kinds of big holidays, were always practiced in the Coptic church anyway, just because the family was Coptic. And, you know, he, when we were in the States, he didn't go to a Coptic church. And although I come from this Coptic family, I'm completely baffled by the rituals. And when Pope Shenouda died, I took my kids to the Coptic church because I wanted them to sort of understand their traditions a little bit. And I didn't know what to do. I was completely lost. And I'm only, you know, my father was born in Egypt. I'm the first generation born outside of Egypt. So I think that that's exactly what happens, is that unless you come from a family that really is within the fold of the diaspora, you know, second, third generation, they assimilate. And then those very, very traditional rituals become very alien to them, and they don't understand them. And so you're seeing that in the Coptic church as well, and I think that's exactly what they were thinking about when they started this church, to sort of teach these rituals to people and sure, not assume that everybody knows them.
Sure. That I think, is a phenomenon that is rather universal. I've spoken to people who build Hindu temples for these first-generation Indian Americans. And then the second generation, they are less patient often, not all the time, but often, with these very ancient rituals in a language they do not understand. So, yeah, that.
Well, and I think that there is, you know, I think that people in a new country, especially in the United States, feel the pressure to assimilate or the desire to assimilate if it's not pressure. And rejecting your parents' religion is part of that.
Certainly. Monique, we are coming down to the wire for this edition of Common Threads. Very quickly, people who are interested in your articles, particularly what we're talking about today, the Coptic Church, how can they find them? You have a website, I believe.
I have a website. I have many of them up there. I think there's a link to my religion news service site, so there's some of it there, too, but most of them should be on my website.
Which is?
Oh, sorry. It's www.moniquelfazi.com. Do you want me to spell that?
Sure.
It's MoniqueElfazy.com.
Wonderful. Well, Monique, I appreciate your time with us today. I've got more questions, and we did not get to your book about evangelical Christianity, which we should take care of next week. So please come back.
I'd love to. Thank you.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today was Monique Elfazi, and we will be back next week right here on WGVU's Common Threads.